Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Gift of Grace on the Word 1220. This is Phil Giuliotti here again on another awesome Sunday night. And this is the Gift of Grace, where we read and teach God's Word, and we proclaim the kingdom and salvation in Jesus the Messiah. So I hope you've had an awesome week. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about Paul, St. Paul, Saul of Tarsus. And I should add right away that many people have the idea that he was named Saul, and he was called Saul of Tarsus, but then when he became the Apostle Paul, he changed his name. That's not strictly true, because many people in those days had two names. Many people today have two names. If you watch the news and you hear about a Middle Eastern leader or well-known figure, it'll say his name, also known as something else. And at this time, in Paul's time, many people had, Jewish people, I should say, had a Hebrew name. And then they had another name, which was generally a Roman name or a Greek name. And since Saul of Tarsus grew up in Tarsus, which was an important commercial center, it was in the Roman Empire, but it was of Greek language and Greek culture. He had the name Paul, or Paulus. More correctly, his name was Paulus, as his kind of Greek-Roman name, but his real name was Saul Shaul. So he didn't change his name. He always had two names. But anyway, that's not the point of the talk. Since we all know that we do call him the Apostle Paul, because he himself talks about how he was called to be an apostle. And as you know, he talks about how he wasn't called like the rest of them. He was called in a different way, but he was called as an apostle. He calls himself a minister of the gospel. He refers to himself as the apostle to the Gentiles, because he commonly says in his letters and in Acts that his mission was to bring the gospel to the Gentiles. He was, as Jesus himself said, Saul was his chosen vessel to the Gentiles. And so he accepted that ministry, accepted that task. And even though he was a Pharisee, he proudly wrote that his mission was to bring the gospel to the Gentiles. So that's pretty cool. Tonight, though, we're going to go really to the very end of his life. And this is described, the text we're going to use is in 2 Timothy chapter 4. So we'll give you a second to flip through it or click to it or whatever it is you have to do to get to it. 2 Timothy chapter 4. He, of course, wrote two letters to Timothy. Timothy was his protege. He refers to Timothy as his son. Now, we know that Timothy was not his biological son. He was a spiritual son that Paul had mentored, he had taught, he had prepared him to be in an awesome ministry, and ended up in the church of Ephesus as, well, they didn't have official ranks then necessarily. There's a lot of names that are thrown around in the book of Acts, but he would basically be a bishop. He'd be a leader of the church in Ephesus. And at the time that this was written, Paul was imprisoned in Rome. In fact, he was just about to be executed. He, of course, was beheaded during the persecutions of Nero, and died very closely to the same time that Peter did. The persecutions under Nero, of course, were horrible, and then later there would be even more horrible ones. And then even later than that, there would be the persecutions under Diocletian, which were also horrible. But we're going to talk about Paul's, really his last, we don't know if it's his last few days, his last couple of weeks, but he's in prison in Rome. Now, You know, today, most of us in the church are not really interested in evangelizing people, not really witnessing to people, because we don't want people to get upset. We don't want people to think we're crazy. We don't want people to think we're weird. Paul was in prison in Rome, and he talks in the book of Acts how he evangelized the guards. He even evangelized people in Caesar's household. So in the household of Nero, Paul had apparently brought the gospel to some of the people who were working there and living there. And there were members in the household of the emperor who had accepted the gospel. And this was all done while Paul was in prison. And yet, we won't even do it to somebody in a coffee shop or our next door neighbor or one of our coworkers. He did it while he was in prison. So tonight we're going to take 2 Timothy chapter 4. We're going to start in verse 6. So I hope you're there by now. So verse 6. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Whoa. So here we are. He's writing to Timothy. He says he's already being poured out. He sees that his work, the time that he has in this life, the time that he has for his work, are about to come to an end. And it says he's been laboring. He says he's been laboring. You know, in 2 Corinthians, he tells us all the hardships he went through, shipwrecked and stoned and beaten with rods and left for dead. And I mean, he goes on and on and on. Being mistreated by Jews, being mistreated by Gentiles, being mistreated in the city, being mistreated in the countryside. But he kept on. He kept on with the work. But now he knew his work was about to come to an end. He'd been laboring very hard. And now new laborers were going to be needed. New laborers were coming on the scene because he was, in fact, going to be leaving soon, and he apparently knew this. He apparently had very strong, we don't know if we would call it a foreboding, a foretelling, a word, but he knew that his ministry was about over, and he's using this time to encourage his spiritual son, Timothy. Now, if you remember Timothy, his mother was a Jew, his father was a Greek, and Paul points out that Timothy had known the scriptures from his childhood, which, of course, was the Tanakh, the Old Testament, obviously, because the New Testament hadn't been written yet. He knew the scripture since his childhood. His mother and his grandmother, they're Lois and Eunice, and I can never remember which one's the mother, which one's the grandmother, but it doesn't really matter in the long run. And it really doesn't matter 2,000 years later, except to say that his mother and his grandmother were diligent, as it says in Numbers chapter 6, were diligent about teaching Timothy. Now, he had a Greek name, and his father was a Greek. For some reason, he had not been circumcised, and Paul points out that he circumcised Timothy himself, and he mentored Timothy. And at this point, he's encouraging him because he knows his time is short. And he says, I'm poured out like a drink offering. I've done so much in these, we don't know exactly how many years, 30 years, 25 years, probably 25 to 30 years. We don't know exactly when the road to Damascus occurred. We don't know exactly when the Lord spoke to him and gave him all those powerful revelations. But he had been ministering, he had been working, he had been preaching, I would say minimum of 25 years, maybe 30 years at this point, because this is around the year 65 AD. So he says, I've been poured out. He's exhausted. He's older by ancient terms, was old. He was probably in his 50s by this time. And he says he's poured out like a drink offering. And the Greek words that are used there literally mean, I'm already a martyr. I'm already dead. I've already been essentially killed for the faith. But he's also confident, as we see. He knows his time is short, but he's very confident. He feels that he's done the work that was assigned to him. And you know, when you read that, he says, I fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I've kept the faith. In other words, I had this mission to do. I worked hard emotionally, physically to do it, under fear, with dangers all around me. I kept at it. I continued with the race. I continued doing what I was supposed to do. I fought the fight. I didn't give up. I kept the faith. I've kept the faith all this time. I did not give up. I didn't say, Lord, this is too much for me, and I'm just not going to go on with this anymore. I can't take this for another week. I'm exhausted from this. I don't know what's going to happen next. No. He says, I fought the fight. I kept the faith. I ran the race. In fact, he says, I finished the race. He was a servant. He was a soldier for the gospel, a preacher for the gospel. As he points out somewhat arrogantly in 1 Corinthians, he did more than all those other guys did. But then he quickly adds, hey, it's all by the grace of God, and whether people heard the gospel from me or someone else, the main thing is that they heard the gospel. Paraphrasing, of course. But he was a servant, he was a soldier, and he's been through blessings, of course, and he's been through tribulation. And when he says he finished the race, you know, he talks about, he uses athletic imagery a lot, and the writer to the Hebrews as well, about run the race, keep your eyes fixed on the prize. We don't know if he wrote Hebrews, but if he did, okay, then he continued with his athletic imagery. If he didn't write it, the writer to the Hebrews also had athletic imagery, because basically it is a grueling athletic competition to finish this race. You know, modern Christianity, should say, Western Christianity in the late 20th and so far in the 21st century, but I think it's starting to change now as we're in this time of judgment, as we're coming up to the Lord coming back. We got to kind of an easy Christianity where people said, hey, I said the prayer, I signed the card, I'm all set. There's nothing that I have to worry about. But Paul here shows us something, that the Christian life is not a 100-yard dash. In other words, it's not over a 9.9 seconds. It's a marathon race, which for some people lasts 10 years, for some people lasts 20 years, for some people lasts 50 years, for some people lasts 80 years. You don't know how long their race is going to be. But sometimes you're running in beautiful, sunny weather, and it's 70 degrees, and you're running through green pastures and green hills. Sometimes you're running through thunderstorms, and you trip. and fall into a puddle and you get all dirty and you're filthy and you get up and you shake yourself off and wash yourself off and then you keep running. And then you get to a beautiful weather again. And then you get to a snowstorm, a blizzard. For those of you in warm climates, you probably don't know, but I'm in northern Ohio. We know about snowstorms. Sometimes you're in a blizzard and you're running. These are the hardships. This is the turmoil that he was in. But he says at the end of this contest, he's very confident that he's going to have the crown of life. He's going to have the crown of life. He's doing all of this to promote the gospel, to get other people saved, as he says, to the Jews, I became a Jew, to the Greeks, I became a Greek. I became all things to all people in order to save some. He doesn't say, but save everybody, in order to save some. And so he says, after all this, I'm going to get the crown of life. The reading, the passage is very specific. There's laid up for me, this is verse 8, finally, there was laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. So he knows he's going to get this crown, but not just him, not just him. The others who have done this work are getting that crown as well. He says, the righteous judge will give me on that day, and not to me only, but to all who have loved his appearing. In other words, he wasn't the only one preaching. He wasn't the only one in the race. He wasn't the only one going through this marathon. Many, many others were. And all of them, if they persevered to the end, were going to get that crown of righteousness. And again, we've come to easy Christianity. Oh, yeah, got it. All set. He struggled. He ran the race. He fought the fight. And he kept the faith. Jesus himself said, those that persevere to the end will be saved. Paul himself said, you work out your salvation in fear and trembling. There's hard things that you have to go through. And the other interesting thing here, I think, is he calls it a crown of righteousness. Righteousness. Now, was Paul holy in righteousness? And righteous? Absolutely not. Well, how do I know that? Well, number one, he was a human man, so you know that he has a sin nature and that he sins. Number two, in the book of Romans, he tells us the good things I want to do, I don't do. The things I don't want to do, that's what I keep on doing. I'm paraphrasing. And he says, wretched man that I am, who is going to deliver me from this? Who's going to deliver me from this? And then he says, Jesus has. He's delivered me, even though I'm a wretched man. He says in 2 Corinthians that there was a thorn in my flesh. Three times I prayed, a thorn in my flesh. People don't know if that was some physical abnormality, if it was some repetitive sin he was doing, but it really troubled him, and it said it was put there by a demon. And three times he prayed to remove this, and God said, my grace is enough for you. So he's righteous because of his position in Jesus. We are righteous because of our position in him. We're not righteous because we're so overwhelmingly holy. We're not righteous because we walk around with our hands folded and there's a kind of a bright halo around our head. Because in my mind, every day, really, sometimes multiple times per day, goes back to 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21. He who knew no sin became sin so that we might become the righteousness of God in him. Our righteousness comes from him. And so Paul here says, I get a crown of righteousness. He had been cooperating with this. He had accepted the ministry he was given. He wasn't sitting home watching TV saying, yep, I'm in. He was doing the work. And then in verse 9, he kind of gets this, you get this human feeling of what he's going through. He says, be diligent to come to me quickly. He wants Timothy to come to him. Timothy's his spiritual son. He was Timothy's mentor. He wants Timothy to come to him. For Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica. Crescens for Galatia, Titus for Dalmatia. Only Luke is here with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, for he is useful to me for ministry. And Antichicus, who I have sent to Ephesus. So he wants to see Timothy as soon as possible. He wanted some emotional help, maybe even some physical help. Help. He wanted to be with the much younger man that he had mentored and that he had basically encouraged in his ministry. And he points out Demas had fallen away, gone back to the world. Crescens and Titus were away. They were preaching somewhere else. They were doing the job. We know Titus was a Gentile who was preaching the gospel. I don't recall who Crescens was. He says, just Luke is with me. And that's great. Dr. Luke was there with him. That's great. But he wanted Timothy, especially wanted to see Timothy. And then he even wants Mark to come. Now, you know, if you know in the book of Acts, and I think it's chapter 15. I don't have it in front of me. But in the book of Acts, Paul doesn't like Mark very much. And he and Barnabas split. They were a team for quite a while, but they split over Mark. He didn't like Mark. He felt Mark had abandoned him. Barnabas, who turned out to be, I can never remember if it's his uncle or his cousin, but in those days it was pretty much the same. Barnabas stood up for Mark, and Paul basically said, well, you like Mark so much, you take him. So Mark took Paul. Took Mark. And Paul took Silas. And then after that, he and Silas were a team. But anyway, now obviously they've been reconciled because he wants Mark to come to him because he's been useful in the ministry. Then he says, Alexander the coppersmith did me much harm. May the Lord repay him according to his works. You also must be aware of him, for he has greatly resisted our words. At my first defense, no one stood with me, but all forsook me. May it not be charged against them. So Alexander did him much harm. He turned on him. No one stood with him while Paul was being tried. He was by himself. But he didn't give up. He fought the fight. He ran the race. He kept the faith to the end. And Timothy is aware of this, but Paul's also making Timothy aware of these other guys who actually had gone against the gospel and against Paul personally and apparently had returned to the world. So he mentions people that have hurt him, Demas and Alexander, but then he also mentions people that have helped him, Titus, Luke, Mark, and then really the most... And this has always been one of my favorite parts of this passage. And it's been really shows the humanity of Paul, where he says, verse 13, bring the cloak that I left with Carpus at Troas when you come, and the books, especially the parchments. You know, he says, I left some stuff behind in Troas, a cloak. I want a coat. Maybe it was cold where he was. He said, like, if you could bring me that cloak, that would really help me out a lot. And bring the parchments, the books. They didn't have bound books, but bring the parchments. These were writings that he had done. Maybe also writings that other people had sent him. And after all this work, he gets this beautiful, you see his humanity coming through. You know, he says in the next verse, but the Lord stood with me and strengthened me so that the message might be preached fully through me and that all the Gentiles may hear. This was his mission. Back in 1 Corinthians 9:16, he says, for if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. for necessity is laid on me. Yes, woe is me if I don't preach the gospel. He followed his mission, and he ran the race, and he kept the faith until the end. Ooh, I hear the music playing. Wow. That's what I call the turmoil of Paul. Well, thanks for listening, and join us again next week for A Gift of Grace, where we'll read and teach God's word and proclaim the kingdom and salvation in Jesus the Messiah. Have a great week.